Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes with the stars, creators, and industry leaders bringing Broadway and the theater back to life after the shutdown. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to the actor Norm Lewis. He's a longtime musical theater favorite who's appeared on Broadway in shows including Porgy and Bess, The Little Mermaid, Once on This Island, and Phantom of the Opera. And he's back this fall in Chicken and Biscuits. In a Broadway first for the actor, Chicken and Biscuits isn't a musical, it's a play. But don't worry, he still does a little singing along the way. Lewis is in the virtual studio with me to talk about his involvement in Black Theatre United, why it was so important to him to play the Phantom, and what it's been like making his Broadway return while Broadway itself is making a return of its own. Hi, Norm. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me. This is awesome.
Yeah. So you are getting ready right now for your, I'm talking to you mid in media res, and you're like getting ready for a day of rehearsal. Tell me a little bit about what that involves.
Yeah, we're still in previews. And the thing about that is that, you know, the show is a lot of times it's experimental. Like some things, they might change a line here or change a direction or movement or something like that. So you have all this time until opening night, and after opening, it's quote unquote frozen. That's never really true, because there's things that change after opening night a lot of times as well. But it's you still have this allotted time to kind of see if certain other things might work, or you know, blah blah blah.
Yeah. And what's it like being back on stage and on Broadway after the shutdown?
Well, gosh, that's a layered question, because just to be back on stage is awesome, no matter where you are. I've been lucky enough to do concerts around the country, and some were outside, some were inside. But it was great to just have that visceral, immediate reaction right away. And it just felt so good after 18 months of, you know, not just staring into a computer and maybe singing or doing, you know, some readings that way. But to be back on Broadway, you know, this is like the zenith of what live entertainment is. And it just feels so good. And the audiences are ready for it. The actors are ready. The audiences are ready. Everybody's ready. So it feels really, really good.
Yeah. And Chicken and Biscuits, the play you're in, comes to Broadway after an earlier run at the Queen's Theater. Had you had a chance to see it then?
No, I didn't even know. I mean, I knew about it, but I didn't know what it was about. And I had spoken with Doug Lyons, our writer, our creator, our brilliant creator, some months before that, because there was a possibility that I could have done the Queen's theater. But
You know him before then? Because he is a performer, has been a performer on Broadway.
Yes.
So had you come across each other?
Yes, we met, actually, funny enough, we met at a wedding of a mutual friend of ours. Mm-hmm. And we started talking, and he was saying, you know, obviously someone who was younger than I am, African-American, and he was like, he admired my work and all this stuff. And so I was very honored by that. But then he said, yeah, I have some things that I'm writing, I'm creating, and I would love you to be a part of that. And I've done a reading for him, a musical reading, a show called 5 Points, which it's brilliant. But when he mentioned Chicken and Biscuits, I didn't know anything about it. But he said, yeah, this show, I think, is going to be great, and I think you'd be great in it. But our schedules didn't work out then, but it definitely worked out for Broadway.
Yeah, how and when did that finally fall into place then?
It was basically once we knew that we were coming back to Broadway. So it was in the summer. He had gotten notice, you know, obviously the people that were creating and the producers and everybody knew what was happening with Broadway. And so he reached out. He said, we're hopefully coming back like in the fall. So I would love you to be a part of it. And so that was where the seed was planted.
Yeah. And what appealed to you about this project in particular?
Well, after reading it, it was like, okay, I totally understand who these people are. I know this family. I know because they're my family. I can relate to it just because of the background, you know, being in the church. I grew up in the church. My grandfather was a preacher. I invoked his spirit. Most of my family is church going or like it. My dad was the chairman of the deacon board. So wow. I know what this environment is all about. But what I also loved about it was the fact that it was about family, and it's told through the lenses of an African-American culture, but everyone can relate to it, which is awesome. We've had a lot of people who were of Jewish faith and Catholic faith saying, oh my God, that's my family. That's my aunt. That's my brother, you know?
Right. Yeah. And my next question was going to be, did you do any sort of special preparation for the role or in terms of how you created your character? How it sounds like you drew a lot on your own experiences with some of the folks in your own family.
I was lucky, yeah, to be able to draw on those experiences, my past experiences. But, you know, you can always look up. I was looking up preachers as well that are modern day and, you know, to see if there was anything new, but actually, no, there's nothing new. It's basically the same sort of, you know, thing. People are, they present themselves in a way that I'm used to from my childhood when it comes to preaching and talking about the gospel.
And how is that? Can you characterize that for us?
Yeah, there's a lot of preachers that are like, I have a cousin, his name is Bobby Lewis, and he's actually going to be coming to opening night, but he's a pastor up here in New York City at New Light Baptist Church. And what I love about his take is that he teaches about the Bible. He teaches about God. He was explaining, and I can't give you specifics right at this moment, but I do remember going to a sermon where he talked about what is part of the Middle East and the names they were called back in the day, you know, that are from the Bible. He said, now this is called this. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. I never knew that. Mm-hmm. Where a lot of preachers that I grew up with, and also my grandfather, would talk about certain things and give great messages, but then all of a sudden they would be this performance aspect that would come into it. Mm-hmm. And just to get the crowd riled up. And obviously it works, and it hits you from an emotional standpoint and a spiritual standpoint.
Right. And so many of the folks involved in this production are people making their Broadway debut. That must contribute to like the atmosphere of just sort of the whole experience. What's that been like?
Oh, it's been so wonderful. The gratitude of the people that are in this show, it's every day they come and they're so excited and they're so grateful to be there. And I am, you know, I am too. I'm just so, because this is not my Broadway debut, but it is my Broadway play debut.
Yeah.
And just to be in that atmosphere and that loving atmosphere, knowing that, you know, how wonderful people feel about that. So.
And is there a sense that you're sort of doing things a little differently? Because here are all these folks who aren't sort of beholden to all the traditions that, you know, Broadway people who are more regularly on Broadway like yourself might just sort of do out of habit. Like, is there a sense that you're sort of operating a little differently?
I don't necessarily have to worry about, you know, because usually when I'm doing a musical, I have to make sure my voice is right on point. I'm not as precious about it this time. Mm-hmm. I do have some things that I have to do, some vocalese in the show. So I do warm up in that regard. I do warm up physically, you know, stretching and things like that. And I try to do my, you know, top of the tee, tip of the tongue kind of thing, you know, the Peter Piper, pick the peck of pick of peppers, all that stuff. But I would say it's not as strenuous as if it were in a musical, because you know, in a musical there's a lot going on. This is a physical show, though. There's a lot of physicality that's in it. Yeah. So we do have to make sure, but it's not as precious as if I were in a musical.
Right. And as we mentioned earlier, the writer of the show, Douglas Lyons, has been an actor on Broadway, and I wonder, has that Do you see that manifesting in the way he writes, in the way he writes for actors and sort of the kind of, and how he works with you?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that that actually helps with our performances as actors. I think some of the best directors, some of the best writers are people who have performed in the past, and because they understand what the experience is. You know, there's some great directors out there. I mean, there's a lot of great directors out there who are great coaches, and they guide you to where you need to go. But if you understand the experience and what you have to, you know, the whole being of being an actor, it just kind of just gives you a better sense of what is necessary to make this product come out right. And Jalen Levingston and Douglas together are an amazing combination.
He's the director, Jalen.
Yeah, it's just this combustion of talent that we actually trust. I mean, here this guy is 27 years old, Jalen, our director, but I feel like I'm in the room with someone who is my age or older, because he's got such depth and such, like, I forget he's 27. Like, he could be my son. He could be my son.
And what was the appeal of the play element? As you mentioned, this is your a debut of sorts for you in terms of you're not singing. I mean, there's some vocal stuff in this show, but you're not, it's not a big splashy Broadway musical. What was the appeal of sort of trying that for you?
Well, first of all, I just want to qualify. If you hear water boiling, that's my coffee being there.
Okay. No, you gotta prep for rehearsal. I understand.
Exactly. I've been, you know, you have to be careful what you ask the universe for, because I've been saying now for years, I want to do a play. Like, I love doing musical theater, but it is extremely difficult and challenging. I love it. I do love it. But, you know, when I was doing Phantom, I had to live like a monk. I didn't speak during the day, and I would go to work. Right. And, you know, a lot of my social activities were put on hold or never existed. So doing a play, not saying that it's not as difficult, but it's just, like I said, it's not as precious when it comes to making sure that you sound the same way you did on Tuesday as you do on Sunday. And because those audiences, you know, they come for that. In a play, I could probably have a raspy voice. Like, if I'm a little tired that day, but I can still have the same intention. So also I wanted to dive deep into being into a character without having the limitation of following a cadence of music. You know what I mean? Like, you have to stay restricted within those meters and within those measures and that rhythm, where in a play you can kind of make your own rhythm. You know, one day I might get mad by yelling at someone, or I might get mad and stay very quiet but intense. So it's all those kinds of elements that I wanted to explore. And I would love to do more plays, just to kind of, you know, face that challenge. Musical theater definitely is something, like when I do Sweeney Todd, it's definitely an intense thing, but you're stuck within the cadence of that music.
Right.
And you find your way within that. But I hope I explained that correctly.
Yeah, no, yeah. That makes perfect sense. Although you did start this, telling us about this by saying that you have to be careful what you wish for. Why do you have to be careful? It seems like you got it. And now maybe you'll do it again.
Well, you have to be very, specific in what you wish. And you know, it's funny because I've manifested so many things in my life. I said, you know, it took time. I mean, they always say, you know, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. Mm-hmm. And so I remember trying to manifest Phantom. I saw it 20 years earlier, and then almost to the day, 20 years later, I got to star in the show. Right. I've, you know, manifested a play. I've been wanting a play for a long time. Finally, it's come to fruition. There's a lot of things in my life that has happened like that. And so you have to be very specific on what you want. And so this is what it is.
And you're back in Circle in the Square for this show, which you've performed in before for Once on This Island. That is a sort of unique experience on Broadway anyway, in terms of the size of the house and the fact that you can definitely see every other single person, in the house with you. Do you enjoy that kind of proximity?
I do. You cannot hide. You have to act. You have to be in the moment no matter what. Usually on a proscenium stage, if you're in the back, you can kind of, lay back a little bit. But, hopefully you're not, because the people pay a lot of money for it. But when you're in the round like that, or the majorly thrust stage, you have to stay active, and you have to be in the moment. And luckily with this show, a lot of it has, I wouldn't say audience participation, but there is an audience. You're allowed to respond and to actually break the fourth wall. So it actually feels great to do that kind of stuff. So,
yeah. You also performed at the Tony Awards this year. What was that experience like? I'm sure it must have been very different from your prior Tony Awards experiences.
Yeah. I was honored to be asked for in the first place and to sing with one of my favorite singers, Kelly O'Hara. Mm-hmm. It was, very moving, knowing and seeing the names of those people who we've lost in the past couple of years. It's in honor of them. And I kept saying to myself, this is to honor them. This is to honor them. It's not about me. It's not about Kelly. It's to honor them. And also honor Broadway. I'm just so happy that we got a chance to celebrate the past couple of years of missing what we've missed, and I'm glad Adrian Warren got her Tony. I'm glad Danny Burstein finally got his Tony. Yes. Mm-hmm. And David Alan Grier as well. I'm so happy for all of the winners, and but it was the award shows to me are a celebration of what we do, and I love what we do so much, and I love our community so much. So it felt great. It felt really great to be a part of that.
I'll have more with Norm right after the break.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
And now, here's more with actor Norm Lewis. Norm, Chicken and Biscuits is one of seven plays by Black writers so far appearing on Broadway this season. Can you tell us a little bit about the significance of that from your perspective? It's essentially unprecedented.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's one of those things where, we've had a major cultural shift the past couple of years, and especially starting last year, with all of the things that happened and the murders and the, uprising and the riots and stuff. So I think people are finally having conversations about change. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that because we got a long way to go. I mean, we've come a long way, but we got a long way to go. Now, what I don't want is this to be a one-off. It's like, okay, let's do this year. And, because there is so many plays that are like, I think it's 7 plays. And then if you add up the musicals, I think there's like 14 that are led by African-American creators. Right. I don't want this to be a one-off and just, you know, to satisfy a quota or whatever the word I'm looking for. But I want this to be the beginning. I want this to be the beginning of plays for Asians, plays for Hispanics or Latinx, I should say, or, you know, just to tell stories from many different perspectives. I think that that window is still open for that. So I'm glad to see what's going on. I'm celebrating to see what's going on this season, but I want it to continue.
Yeah. You're one of the founding members of Black Theater United with folks like Roger McDonald and the Shawns and Vanessa Williams and Kenny Leon. Yes. Tell us a little bit about how, when and how you got involved with that.
Well, it was from the beginning. I remember LaChance and Audra having a conversation amongst themselves about what happened with George Floyd. And they said, where are the producers for Broadway? What, you know, is anyone saying anything? And there was a lot of passion that was going into that question. And so they decided to call their friends. Thank God I'm one of those friends, and just have a Zoom and talk about it. Because, you know, obviously Broadway was not happening at that time. So we wanted to see what is going on with our world, our culture, our industry, things like that. And so we just decided, it was about, I think about 20 or 21 of us were in that Zoom. And then from that, we decided, let's start something. Let's do something. There were other organizations out there, Black Theater Coalition. Mm-hmm. There's Broadway Advocacy Group, Coalition. And so we're uniting with all of them as well and trying to basically have the same message of let's start a conversation and let's have people of different backgrounds in the room, not only creatively, but, you know, we want to see it in administration, in casting, in producing. And so we're putting forth efforts to make changes that way and letting people know that they can, you know, if you love theater but are not a performer, you still can be a part of theater in some capacity. Yeah. And those are the conversations.
Yeah, and one of the things that BTU recently released just last month was called the New Deal. That was sort of a list of commitments that sort of all aspects of the industry made toward making change. And that grew out of this series of summit meetings over the course of many months and that were broken down into cohorts, as I understand it. And I imagine you participated as in one of the acting cohorts. Do I have that right?
Yeah, well, I was part of the union committee.
Yeah.
And we basically, there was, you know, this huge forum, basically, of people from different industry, you know, different parts of this industry. Mm-hmm. And we had a big meeting and then we split off into different committees, unions and producers and creatives and things like that. And so we had conversations and we were lively and we let people like, tell us what you feel. If you feel this is wrong, tell us that, you know, let us have a conversation. And so we, from those conversations, we put this new deal together with lawyers and, you know, a facilitator who deals with diversity and things like that. And we put together this documentation that we wanted people to at least commit to moving forward with it. Is it solid? I wouldn't say that it's solid. I think it's malleable. Like the Constitution, we want people to be able to amend things because things change over time. But we're just so happy that the conversation is started. Mm-hmm. And we want the conversation to continue.
Yeah. And has your involvement in BTU shifted your perspective in terms of your own work on Broadway and the kind of things you want to work on?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing is, I've been very lucky. I've been very blessed with, you know, because I get asked this question a lot about, has racism played a part in your career? I don't know. Once I leave the room after the audition, it's not my, you know, I don't know what goes on after that. But I've been able to be lucky enough to be in the room in some aspects of shows that are not necessarily quote unquote African-American or culture, you know, cultural specific. Now I do remember there are times of things that have happened to me, small things that I go back and I go, that wasn't right. And I do see it from a perspective from the lens of a black man, but I move forward. And I know that there are people that I stand on the shoulders who've had to endure a lot more than I did. There was a lot of people newer in the industry that have experienced certain things that are like blatant. And I want to be that person to be an advocate and someone to support that, to make sure that those things are not happening again. But on the other side of it, like, it's more about just knowledge and opportunity. There are a lot of young African-Americans or people of color that don't know that they could be in casting, that they don't know that they could be in administration, for company management, things like that. So we want to open that door. And also there's a lot of people that don't even think that they could be directors or choreographers because they feel like it's so limited. So we want to just, again, make sure those opportunities are available. And if we can be that organization or be part of many organizations that can help facilitate that, love to be that.
Yeah. You have alluded to this already, but you have played many of musical theater's biggest roles, sometimes more than once. You talked about Phantom, you talked about Sweeney, you've done Javert in Les Mis, you've done Porgy, you've done Billy Flynn in Chicago. Do you have a favorite?
No, they're all like my little kids. So,
but was Phantom, it sounds like Phantom had a special place in your heart in terms of a role being a role that you saw many years ago and then wanted to play.
Well, I love the show. I thought the show was fantastic. I saw Colm Wilkinson do it up in Toronto. And I was like, oh my God, I have to be in this show somehow because I love it. I love the music, yada, yada. But I never thought that I could play the Phantom because I thought I had to be a star. I'd known that Robert Guillaume played the role.
I saw that. My first production of Phantom of the Opera I saw.
Are you serious?
First national tour in Southern California. Absolutely. Yep.
That's amazing.
He was my first Phantom. Yep.
It was one of those things where, you know, I'm like, okay, well, you know, he's Benson, you know, he's been on television and he's a star. So, you know, of course they're going to give him that opportunity. But he also had the chops. It wasn't like stunt casting. That man could sing his face off. But I just thought maybe it's in order for me as a black man to be in that role, I would have to have some sort of star status. So I just kept, you know, going on with my career. And people kept asking me, what do you want to, you know, what's your dream role? And I said, Phantom. And after a while, it became more than just wanting to play the role. I wanted to also set a precedent and, you know, hopefully show that African-Americans are more than just doing the whiz and, you know, and being able to, this was, you know, Phantom is quote unquote, like the pinnacle of male musical theater roles. It's one of those, like, when people know that you played the Phantom, they go, oh, you were the Phantom, you know, that kind of thing. It's like winning Miss America. It doesn't matter who's under, it doesn't matter who's under the mask. Is if you've worn the mask, you're somebody who's special, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of why I wanted it. All right. So finally getting it, then it became bigger than that. It became like, you know, I got all these accolades, being the first African-American to play it on Broadway, standing on the shoulders of Robert Guillaume. But I remember I got the person of the week on ABC. Diane Sawyer said my name. I'm like, what the hell is happening right now? But I would meet people after the show who were from India, from Brazil, from China, saying, now I feel like I could play the role. Mm-hmm. And so it became that for me. It was like being that representation for these people who were hopeful to be a part of the show. And so that That's what I hold dear and near to my heart.
Yeah. Is there a composer whose work you particularly gravitate to? You've sung the scores of, possibly all of the musical theater greats. What is there someone in particular whose work you really that really attracts you?
Well, you know, I always love Sondheim. I mean, that's he's the Shakespeare of musical theater. But I've been able to, you know, obviously Andrew Lloyd Webber is amazing. My first show in New York, quote unquote New York, I rehearsed in New York, but we did a show at a Candlewood Playhouse in Danbury, Connecticut, was Joseph and the Amazing Blah, Blah, Blah. Oh, then I got a chance to do, you know, Jesus Christ Superstar with John Legend. So,
yeah, on TV.
You know,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can't beat Andrew Lloyd Webber's stuff, man, you know. But I would say I would love to do Paskin Paul. I would love to kind of get in there somewhere because those guys are fantastic. I've only had a snippet of performing Andrew Lipa's music, and I would love a chance to do that. Jason Robert Brown, I adore. He's like one of my best friends. I love him so much, and I love his music. So I'm open to pretty much everybody, but I'm going to tell you, Douglas Lyons and his writing partner as well.
Great.
They have some really good music on the horizon. So I'm looking forward to that.
It seems like in general, you are involved a lot in sort of revivals, particularly sort of big musical properties. Is that happenstance or is that a thing that you sort of gravitate toward? Because now, you know, Chicken and Biscuits is a new play and you're talking about Douglas's, you know, new show coming up.
It's pretty much happenstance. I mean, you know, I was not even Porgy and Bess was never a dream to do. Like, I never thought of that show. I thought they would always hire somebody who was from the opera stage to play Porgy. I thought if anything, I would be Sporting Life. When they said we want you to come and audition, I was like, oh, it's Sporting Life, you know, because that's usually a musical theater person, even on the opera stage. But no, they said Porgy. And I'm like, what? Okay. All right. So then it became like, oh, well, this is, you know, I get a chance to hang out with that Audra girl, woman.
What's her name?
Yeah. What's your name? Audra something. But I think it is by happenstance that I'm doing revival. Yeah, you're right. Because if you think about my lineage, you're like Les Mis, Porgy and Bess. What else was
you did Little Mermaid. I'm speaking particularly of your Broadway kind of portfolio and even, you know, Sweeney Todd more recently off Broadway. It's a lot of Once on This Island, you know, but you did, there was King Triton and Little Mermaid. That was,
yeah. How about that? Old chestnut. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, I was, that was another moment of like, okay, Disney, all right, you're going to go with a black guy. Whoa, that's pretty progressive. You're trusting me with your multi-million dollar show. And we had a great time and, you know, obviously built some amazing relationships. Sierra Vargas will always be the Little Mermaid. And we just, it was funny because I remember the lighting for that show. Because she was so pale, they wanted her not to go into the sun at all. And I had to wear makeup that made me shine. So I wore a lot of gold and glitter. So that way we could balance each other out on stage. But yeah, you know, kudos to Disney for being so progressive. They've been doing that for many years now. And I love that.
Yeah, yeah. So how long are you in Chicken and Biscuits? And then what's next on your plate after that?
Chicken and Biscuits, I think, runs until first week of January with, I think, a possibility of an extension somehow, because I think American Buffalo is coming into the theater after that. And then I have concerts in Southern Florida coming up. But the biggest thing I'm excited about it's March 4th. I will make my Carnegie Hall solo debut. I've done Carnegie Hall before, but I've never done it by myself. And so I'm excited to be with the New York Pops.
How do you think of your concert performances as, why, how, what makes them,
particularly attractive as something for you to do in addition to the work you do that we see on, you know, Broadway and off-Broadway stages?
Well, what I love about the concert world is that it's a party. I never call them concerts or shows. Mm. It's a party. I'm having fun on stage with either the orchestra, either a piano, or a trio that I, you know, travel with. It's a party. And I just took that philosophy from the Rat Pack. They always said, we're going to have fun on stage. If you want to come and join us, come on. And that's the way I like to do things. It's very casual. I'll speak to the audience. I'll love when they speak back to me. You know, it's not, I don't want you to just sit there and just relax. I want you to kind of engage in it. So it's also music that I get to choose. Dialogue I get to say that I've written out, or stories I want to tell. So that's the fun part about it. You're more in control.
How's your coffee? How's breakfast?
Oh, my coffee's fantastic. Great. I drink mushroom coffee.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Yeah. It's wait, let me tell you the brand real quick. Hold on. It's called Mud. M-U-D. Mm-hmm. Mud. And I guess mud water.
And is there actually coffee in it in addition to the mushroom?
There's a caffeine. There's somehow they put caffeine in it.
Okay.
But it's not as much as regular coffee, because I was drinking too much coffee. So this is a great alternative. Plus, it also, I feel like a commercial right now.
this is the kind of intimate details that I feel like people are really wanting to know. But drink your mushroom coffee.
No, but it also helps you, like, it doesn't give you like that buzz and then drops you off. It actually kind of stays with you throughout the day. And I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it.
And you're going to need that because you've got a busy day. You've got what, rehearsal and then a show tonight?
I've got rehearsal and I got a show tonight.
All right. Well, enjoy rehearsal, break a leg tonight. And we look forward to seeing you at Carnegie Hall in March. Thanks, Norm. Thanks for chatting with me.
You are awesome. Thank you. You're a great interviewer. And you made me feel so at ease.
Great.
I get nervous with these things. I always feel like I'm going to say something stupid. But you made me feel very much at ease. I still may have said something stupid, but...
No, never. Not at all. We'll cut it out. Thanks, Norm. Great talking to you.
You too. Take care.
That was Norm Lewis, who's appearing in the new play Chicken and Biscuits, now running at Broadway's Circle in the Square Theater. In November, you can catch him appearing alongside Reba McEntire and John Schneider in the Lifetime holiday movie Christmas in Tune. If you like what you're hearing on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, I'd really appreciate it if you took the time to rate and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps us grow our audience of folks who love theater as much as you and I do. Or tell a friend about Stagecraft. Find past episodes or subscribe on all the pod places, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and on the Broadway Podcast Network, which is a great place to find more theater for your ears. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another new episode. Until then, find me on Twitter at @GCoxVariety. Thanks for listening, and see you soon.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.